Shed.
Hello and welcome to the Cosmic Shed. I'm Andrew and today's episode is all about science and religion. Science fact, science fiction and everything in between. And I feel like religion comes into science fiction quite a lot. There's a sort of hint of it in the current Star Trek Discovery series with the Red Angels. It's playing on my mind a little bit. And one of our guests produced a comic called My Evolution, Living Along the Spectrum of Science and Religion by Jordan Culver. And Jordan is here in the shed with us today.
I'm a freelance illustrator and comic artist and a science communicator. So I like to try and combine those as much as possible, although it doesn't always happen. There's lots of comic and illustration work that doesn't necessarily have to do with science, but when they come together, that's what I love it the most. And I really like to use comics as a way of talking about science, because I think it's a pretty welcoming medium to people who might not read science.
You've actually sat in this cosmic shed before.
I have.
Because you sat in here just before The Last Jedi.
Yes.
And
we watched The Force Awakens.
Yeah, we
in
did.
In preparation.
And then went off to the biggest screen we could find to watch The Last Jedi. And what a joy that was. But we are not alone in the shed. We are joined by a man who's appeared on the Cosmic Shed before, but not in the shed.
True, and I'm Malcolm Love, the Love in Love and Science, which is a BCFM radio programme of which you are co-host. I'm a producer, programme maker, train people to be on radio, television and speak in public, so I feel under enormous pressure to do something like this because I could come over absolutely dreadful. I have a background which is relevant to this, which is my first job in life was I was a minister of religion.
Oh, wow.
So I was a Baptist minister.
I didn't even know the background.
There
great.
We go.
Yeah, brilliant.
He snuck me in.
Yes.
So we will hear from another person in this podcast, Ty Aziz.
I'm a filmmaker at the BBC, but I make films in my own time as well. So I was brought up as a Muslim, and I was taught the way to see the world is that, you know, everything we do should serve a higher purpose, and that higher purpose is God. And I guess I slowly started to fade away from it after I started being interested in things like science, because that taught me a different way to see the world. And those two ways to see the world didn't match.
Where did they not fit together?
There are scriptures in the Quran that describe how humans develop in the womb and how the planet Earth was formed and how the universe was made. And those things didn't match with what I was learning in school, and that caused a bit of scepticism. But also things like how to view certain people and how we should treat people based on their religion. I didn't agree with the ways that it seemed quite judgmental in that fact of, you know, if someone's not Muslim and if someone doesn't have the same religion as you, we shouldn't treat them the same way. And I never liked that. I found that quite restrictive. I was taught that anyone who didn't believe in Islam was wrong and their opinion didn't matter as much, and that they were bad people no matter what they did, no matter what they did in their life. Even if they worked for a charity and devoted their whole life to conservation or human rights, if they weren't a Muslim, they were a bad person. And that made it very difficult to, one, make friends with anyone who wasn't Muslim, because you look at everyone through that lens of, you're not Muslim, so you must be a bad person. And it's really hard to see past that filter if that's what you've been brought up with your whole life. And because Islam is quite an insular community, I only ever hung out with friends who are Muslim or my family. So you just kind of, it just is layer upon layer of all these different cognitive biases and like judgmental ways of looking at everyone around you. And it's really hard to break out of that. So you kind of have to train your brain to start from scratch and say, okay, well, not everyone's an evil person just because they don't follow the same religion as me. I had to set out and find myself rules that I could follow that weren't from Islam, but rules that I had set for myself of how am I going to treat people and see the world, and kind of like start that morality journey from scratch. It was really interesting and terrifying at the same time.
So when did this happen?
I probably admitted to myself that I wasn't particularly religious when I was about 16 or 17. That was when I became the most aware of it. But then I only really admitted it to my parents a year or two ago, and that was quite a difficult conversation. And we are not really on speaking terms anymore because of that. In my mind, I'm still the same person, and following a religion or not doesn't affect who I am. I'm still me. So for them to kind of say, well, effectively, you're not our daughter anymore, was absolutely heartbreaking. And it was really frustrating because they're my parents and I want to look after them, and my culture is very steeped in respect for your elders, and so doing that just felt like the greatest dishonour that I could put onto them, and it was really hard. But I just said to them, you know, I'm not going to lie about who I am for the rest of my life, because I knew that, you know, for example, if I ever have children one day, they're going to have a say in my children's upbringing, and I don't want all this kind of stuff to come out in the woodwork, because then it'll affect my children's lives and it'll affect my marriage, and you know, I don't want to lie about who I am.
Do you think they'll ever change their minds?
I don't know.
What do you think you will?
I don't think I will. I think I've definitely made a decision that I'm not. I wouldn't say that I'm definitely not religious, but I definitely don't believe in Islam. I don't believe in God, but I would say that I'm somewhere in the middle of kind of wanting to believe that there's something, but not sure quite what that is. As for my parents, I think it'll always be a barrier for them, because that's the way they've just been brought up, and that's what's ingrained in their mind. It's so I always remind myself that it's not their fault, and I can't blame them. It's just like how they were brought up, and that's ingrained into their head, so deeply rooted in the way they think, that it's not their fault. But my mum has started talking to me again a little bit, and I still go see my younger siblings. It does get awkward, but I don't know. Whether they'll eventually come round, I'm not sure. We'll see.
And you left them in another city?
Yeah, so they live in Leeds and I live in Bristol now, which helps. The distance helps, I think. And it was nice to just move to Bristol and kind of start fresh and move away from all the family I had who would be, you know, the thing about religious families is because all of my family live in Leeds together, as soon as my aunties and uncles heard about this whole thing, my parents became very ostracised from the rest of my family, and they have to face a lot of negative criticism from everybody else in that community, so it was nice to kind of just remove myself from that.
And much more from Ty later. And Jordan, why did you write this, create this? Do you write a comic?
Yeah, well, you can. In this case, I both wrote and illustrated the comic. Yeah. I also do lots of collaborative work with authors, and they will write the script, and I'll do the art, I guess, much like you'll have a screenwriter for a TV show or a film, and then, you know, you'll have the director and cinematographer. In this case, I'm the Stanley Kubrick of this one. The auteur, you know, kind of put it together myself in collaboration with a research project. So I was asked by a research project called Science and Religion, Exploring the Spectrum, to talk about the research in some kind of interesting way. I chose comics because that's my thing. Somebody else did a YouTube video. And so basically I met with various members of the team over the course of a couple of weeks, talked to them about the research, just kind of let that percolate, and they gave me pretty free rein to then explore what aspects of the research I thought most interesting and kind of weave that together. Mm. Now, I initially intended this to be a 6-page kind of comic, but I was like, oh, there's a lot more I really want to kind of sink my teeth into here. So I expanded it to something like 18 pages, which it is now, because I also have a personal stake in this as well. I guess much like Malcolm, he used to be a minister. I, of course, did not used to be a minister, but I was a self-identified, born-again evangelical Christian for the bulk of my life. I guess probably I blurred out of that when I was around 22 years old. I'm now in my early 30s, so most of my life I've been a believing Protestant, Baptist Christian. So I sort of had a vested interest in this subject, right? And the other interesting thing about the research project was that a lot of the discussion about science and religion is fit within a U.S. paradigm, right? Because the United States, I think as a lot of people might be aware, has a pretty unique relationship with science and religion. It's very conflict-driven. It's deeply embedded within politics and culture in a way that is not necessarily applicable in other contexts. So what this research project was looking at doing was kind of divorcing research from that context and looking at it within the UK and Canada as sort of like a control group almost, which is kind of like America, but not, you know, not really.
Yeah.
Just let's try somewhere else, anywhere, please, God, but not the United States. And so that appealed to me as well, because I'm Canadian. So I was like, okay, so I'm a Canadian ex-Christian living in the UK as a non-Christian. So I sort of have this experience that roves from one end of the so-called spectrum to the other, which in the title of the project, they're seeking to explore. So I tried to kind of pepper that into the narrative to create a narrative out of their research. A tiny little bit of self-exorcism and navel-gazing, but also as a narrative hook for people, like, why should you care about this research? Because it affects people's lives to a certain extent.
So just to be clear, how do you define yourself now in terms of a belief system or lack thereof?
I no longer hold a supernatural view of the universe. I'm an atheist, humanist, science champion. Not that being a science champion is exclusively an atheist pursuit, but in my case it is.
Mm-hmm.
Science played an important role in what I call my deconversion, but not a necessary one.
Mm.
I had a really profound interest in nature and I guess what you could call like a childhood interest in science when I was a Christian, when I was a young man. But I lost a lot of that when I was a teenager and I sort of figured, well, why learn about the creation when I can learn about the creator? Creation's great. And just to be clear, creation, I think, is what Christians refer to as all of the natural world, what God created, his handiwork, creation. So creation is great, but rather than devote all of my energy and attention to that, why not, you know, look at theology and the stuff of God and that? So I think maybe my interest waned a little bit. I pursued a history degree in my undergraduate with the aim of kind of proving the Bible to be a historically valid document.
Interesting.
It did not turn out that way. It did not turn out that way,
That's
in fact.
That's a hard call.
Malcolm. Mm.
Well, I identify as an agnostic. Rather than an atheist, I'm not terribly happy with calling myself an atheist. I have nothing against atheists, but I find it slightly difficult. Only really because I think an atheist is it just feels too strong a conviction to me.
Mm.
I'm slightly uncomfortable with calling myself an atheist, although probably in practice I am. The agnostic take is simply that, you know, I'm much more comfortable with not only saying I don't know, but the stronger form of agnosticism, which says, and I don't think we can know certain things. That kind of makes sense to me. My background is that I grew up in a very religious family. My dad was a Baptist minister. He was one of these people who had a Pauline conversion, you know, in the sense that he went into church. Apparently, his story is that he was a soldier, was dating my mother. She took him to church. As the collection plate came round, he tossed a coin, said, "Heads you get it, tails you don't."
Mm.
You know, which really embarrassed my mother, kind of showing off like that. By the end of the service, he'd been so affected by what the preacher had said that he came out not only a Christian, converted, but wanting to become a minister himself.
Wow, that's quite the sermon.
Well, that's quite a story, isn't it?
Yeah.
So anyway, so I grew up with that. My dad is someone who has a very warm personality. And although he comes from a conservative evangelical background, he fell into a... He didn't have a background, but, you know, he became part of a community that was conservative evangelical Baptists. He always thought that people were more important than dogma, which is interesting.
Hmm.
And I like to think I inherited that. I myself had a conversion experience, but it was a much more pedestrian thing. But Dad took me to hear Billy Graham speak. And I have to say, I've got quite a lot of respect for Billy Graham. He died a couple of years ago. Someone who was as clean as a whistle, you know, published his earnings, kept moving, kept changing, became very inclusive, you know, was very unwilling to kind of damn people and stuff. But had this very typically sort of conservative evangelical idea of conversion. His son, I'm afraid, has disgraced him pretty much with extreme right-wing politics, saying that God has appointed Donald Trump as president and all that rubbish. I imagine Billy Graham rotating in his grave, you know, at the moment, because he would never have done that. Anyway, I digress. What happened with me was on contact with real people as a minister, because I eventually became a minister. I had a passion for science, actually, as a child, which I never lost. Our youth leader had a huge influence, and his wife had a huge influence on me and for all of us young people. He was a real creationist. Evolution is a trick of the devil, you know, and, you know, look at these rocks in the ground, you know, why are they there? Well, God put them there to test our faith. All this kind of complete gibberish. But it challenged me a bit, because he had an answer for this kind of thing. I myself went on to become a minister in Battersea in London, and the way I describe it is that upon encountering real people and real people's lives, it kind of sobered me a bit. I liberalised and liberalised and liberalised. I fell off the edge. I didn't believe enough to do the job. And I sort of ran screaming into the woods, really, and became a journalist. One of the things that caused me to move as well was I just kept reading, because there was so much that I knew that I didn't know. I couldn't reconcile. It didn't make sense. So I just read everything. You know, I read lots of liberal theologians and lots of philosophy and all this kind of thing. And in the end, I just thought, oh, well, this doesn't work. And what I did was, it was such a relief. Imagine, my whole life had been about religion. When eventually I came out at the other end, the relief was in. I think I was like 6 feet taller. Really? I'm pretty tall.
You're a tall man, yeah.
And
about a foot tall before this?
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah.
And I completely rejected Christianity and sort of lived a very non-Christian life is. And then eventually just came back to this thing where I was really uncomfortable with damning religion and Christians and Christianity and other forms of religion because it wasn't rational or provable. That started to bug me and bother me. It was actually the new atheists that bothered me.
I sort of ended up in the same spot, but it took me a long time to get there, because I guess I went through a post-religious adolescent sort of angsty phase. In my case, it was the new atheist literature, which played some instrumental role in at least making me think of the alternative, because I had no conversion experience. I just always took these foundational assumptions to be true about the universe, that there was a God, that he did create the universe, that sin was a real thing. You know, this was just the way that the world was. Yeah. So,
of course, that's what scientists, certainly pre-Darwin, or pre-Enlightenment, let's say, people like Newton, Francis Bacon, people like this, were believers. Mm-hmm. Sorry, not Francis Bacon, the other Bacon.
Believers.
Kevin Bacon.
It was just the cultural norm to, ostensibly, everybody believed this, because there was, what else were you going to believe in sort of a Western European context? And then in my context, I didn't really know anybody who wasn't a Christian, let alone have the exact same kind of Christian beliefs as me, right? Because you realize the diversity, and I would sort of think of them as not true Christians, as it were.
Yes.
But in any case, the new atheist movement, I think it was kind of useful for me to go, wait a minute, so like there's a different way to look at this that actually makes sense to me.
I think we need to go to Ty.
I started feeling skeptical, and my first kind of way to try and remedy that was to engross myself in the religion even further, because I immediately assumed, okay, this must be my fault because I don't understand the religion well enough, so I need to educate myself. So I went to Arabic classes and I went to extra Sunday school and completely immersed myself in the religion. I even wore a hijab for like 2 years, and I kind of just felt like I loved the community, I loved the people around me, but the religion itself, the more I learned about it, the more I hated it, and the more I hated, like, being part of that community. But when I say I hated the religion, what I mean is, I hated the fact that I was different, like, everyone else was following it, and I hated the fact that I was the only one that was struggling with my belief and having to make life difficult for myself by moving away from it, and everyone else was fine and everyone was just going about their daily life, and I just thought, oh, why can't that be me? Why can't I just be the same as everyone else and just follow it along.
So it is quite hard to leave any religion. Was there anything that gave you, if you like, a kind of crutch?
At the height of all of this happening, I felt like I was in a really dark place because I felt really isolated and alone. And I couldn't talk to anyone in my family about it, so I naturally turned to the internet for help and started Googling, you know, ex-Muslim, please help, and found this whole massive online community of people just like me, and that was my saving grace. And that's actually how I met my boyfriend, who I've been with for 3 years now. So that online community of people really kind of pulled me out of that dark place I was in and just showed me that, yeah, there are other people like me and I'm not alone. And it is possible to deal with this journey. And yeah, so now I have loads of online friends all around the world who I have met in person. Who went through the same journey as me, which is wonderful.
When did science kind of come in for you?
When I said that I started feeling sceptical around 16, that was when I started getting more into science. And because I was learning about it in school and in college, and I've always been quite nerdy and I've always loved reading. And so the more I learned about science and the scientific method and evidence-based practice, and all of that made sense to me, whereas religion didn't. And so I think just learning about science and the beauty of science itself and the methods of which it's practiced, that was definitely far more believable, and I could put my faith in that a lot easier.
There were aspects of my religion which science doesn't fit with at all, and I was asking questions of my religious leaders and I wasn't getting any response. Is that an experience you had?
Yep. Yeah, definitely. So I studied physiology. I just wanted to learn more about myself, and the human body was a good topic to kind of delve into my understanding of how the world worked. But then in my kind of quest to find out more about religion and see whether I was actually just wrong, I started reading more about the science that Islam taught, and I found a few passages in the Quran that explained how humans grow in the womb, and it explains really clearly which parts of a human are developed first in the womb. But they were scientifically incorrect. So I went to a local leader of a mosque and talked him through, you know, this is what it says in the Quran, but this is my science textbook, and they're different. Is it our fault? Is it, you know, is science behind? Is the Quran wrong? What was going on? I didn't say, you know, the Quran is wrong. But what really struck me was the way that he just completely rejected science and explained that it was a Western fallacy and that science is not the ultimate truth that Western civilization proclaims it to be. That really struck me as he was so strong in rejecting it without even looking at the evidence. And I just thought, you know, any true scientist would never just look at something and say it was wrong without properly considering both sides of the story. So I always remember that as, you know, it just felt like it was very judgmental. And yeah, I kind of just kept on reading other things that didn't match up and kind of went on from there.
But does it... I mean, obviously, there are a lot of people who are Muslims who are scientists.
Yeah. I mean, I don't understand that personally. And I have a friend who, a close friend who is a zoologist and a biologist, and she's a Christian. And I remember asking her about, you know, you studied biology, so obviously you understand evolution, and you study Charles Darwin and you understand the theories behind evolution. So how does your Christianity and how does that interplay with each other? And she found that difficult to answer to, but she just said, you know, my faith is really strong and I just believe in the beautiful design of nature. I personally, I don't find them compatible, whereas some people do.
as people are listening to this, you can tell that we're in a fairly noisy, busy cafe. I feel like there's probably parts of the world where we couldn't have this conversation in a busy cafe.
Yeah, but yeah, you definitely couldn't have this conversation in the Middle East, for sure, especially as a woman, especially as a non-white woman. I mean, you might have heard recently about that woman who was tweeting live from her hotel room about the fact that she'd fled, I think it was the UAE or Kuwait. And, you know, I have personal ex-Muslim friends who've had to flee their homes and not be able to talk about their religion in front of their family because they would suffer terrible consequences. So actually, I'm really lucky in a way because I found my freedom and I can enjoy it.
I was brought up without religion. If I asked my parents anything about God, I pretty much had the response, oh, right, what do you think? I still to this day have no idea whether either of my parents had any faith whatsoever.
Right.
I do know that at my mum's funeral, and there was a Bible reading, and they stood up to read the Bible, and there was some delay, and the man who was going to do the Bible reading is obviously a good friend of my mum's, and after quite a few minutes, he said, well, if there was ever proof of life after death, it is the fact that at Anne's funeral, we can't find a Bible in the church to do the reading. That's the only kind of hint that I have. I sort of found my own way into a faith in my teenage years. My questions weren't being answered, so I went to the local church. My parents allowed me to go. I asked a lot of questions. To be honest, I didn't get any answers. And not long after that, I got frustrated by not getting the answers, but didn't lose my faith, but tried to leave the church, which they were fine with, to be honest. But they said, please, can you still play for our football team?
Please stop asking questions, but do play for the team still.
Leave your feet.
Which I did for a bit, and then I moved on. And then I actually studied religion for A-level because I found the whole topic utterly fascinating. And that was a firework. I really didn't find science as a part of losing faith, really, at all. It was sort of several years after losing my faith that science came in, so it wasn't clear. The narrative that's often sort of thought about is this transition from religion, and then you find science and you become an evangelist.
Science sort of edges religion out of the way, and then this mutually exclusive idea that as you learn science, then you become irreligious.
Yes.
And then you become an evangelist for science instead.
Yeah, it wasn't like that for me. I didn't really have a very strong faith at any point. It was just a question, just a sort of wondering. And the reason why it sort of fell apart was actually studying religion, the other religions, and just thinking of the very simple concept that if I'd been brought up in Islamabad, I probably wouldn't have been a Christian. And it was only the surroundings that I was brought up in that had led me to that particular religion. And so why was my religion right and theirs wrong? And maybe they're all wrong. They can't all be right. And then I sort of came to this conclusion that if there is a God, I don't believe in an interventionist one. The miracles don't speak to me. I don't think those really happened. So if anybody's talking to me about the God, I would need to see evidence of it for me to believe in it. I've never seen evidence of it, so I don't believe it. And it's as simple as that, really, for me.
What I think is interesting listening to your stories, though, and what resonates with mine as well, was that it no longer worked for you, right? That's how you phrase it. It didn't make sense anymore. I can relate to that very much. But I think underlying all of that is that we're trying to make sense of the world through religion, right? And that you went to the church in the first place because you had these profound existential questions about existence that you wanted to understand. And the cultural default for the place that has these answers is religion, that has a monopoly on these big, profound, you know, big questions, capital B, capital Q. That's sort of what drove you to some sense of faith in the first place, Andrew, right? You went to the church to find those answers, and then eventually that faded away because it didn't really work for you. The same with you, Malcolm. But I find, because there, I have many friends and family who have maintained their faith, And a lot of the time it's because their motivation for their belief isn't to gratify those deep questions in the first place. I mean, I think that that's a pretty universal human thing to begin with. That's, for me, why religion sort of exists.
Yeah.
But its tie-in to science is that I think it's a way to try and seek some form of knowledge about the same deep human questions that everybody has and that we all sought.
Yeah.
And then when it stopped making sense in a religious context, well... we went, well, this doesn't work. We have to do something else. What can we do? For us, it meant, I guess, sort of leaving a formal Christian context.
Yeah.
For other people, I'm not convinced they're really bothered to begin with. They think, well, I don't know about all that stuff, but I'm a Christian and that's that, or I'm not a Christian and that's that.
Yes, and actually, we're not. So that's a really good point, because we're not always talking about the same thing. Oh, when we talk about religion or religious people, you're talking, to use your terms, with the comic that you, fantastic comic by the way, that you, I think that you made. There's a spectrum. So there are some people who are, you know, I believe every word that the Bible says, and I, you know, this is my conviction, and wherever there are inconsistencies with science, well, I believe the Bible over science.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah.
And I thought that anybody who didn't have that view was not a true Christian, right? They're confused about what Christianity actually is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're not. Well, I know the same. I remember thinking that about our local vicar. In the village, you know, the poor chap, you know, he just wasn't a proper Christian because he didn't get it. And then the spectrum runs all the way out to people who go to church, enjoy the social aspect of the church, enjoy praying or rather find it meaningful or being... Right. being.
But you ask them about the resurrection of Christ.
Yeah, and they go, I don't know, I'm not sure about that.
Or perhaps even, I don't think it happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Certainly since moving to the UK, my experience with a lot of religious people I've encountered has baffled me, even, you know, coming from a religious context... Now in a non-religious context, but people will be, I don't, of course Jesus wasn't the Son of God, or of course he didn't raise from the dead, that's impossible.
Yes.
But they're, you know, avid Christians, and I think, how? I guess that's my old fundamentalism coming through, thinking, how can you be a Christian if you don't believe this foundational truth?
And it's quite interesting, the both of us, Ty of course has a different perspective on it, we have a conservative fundamentalist background or fundamentalist-ish background. And that's a particular animal, isn't it?
I think what makes it particular, though, is that it provides a veneer of certainty.
Yes.
Which is what... And that sounds to me, Andrew, what you were looking for. I guess that's why science can have this great appeal, because although it doesn't provide certainty, it does provide testable results that you can be more certain of than I was familiar in my religious context.
Yes.
Obviously understanding the provisional nature of any scientific truth in inverted commas. But nevertheless, I recognize a very familiar personality trait when I'm talking with creationists. They have certainty that they're craving satisfied in a creationist worldview, in the same sense that people can find in the certainty from the scientific method in an evolutionary worldview. Mm. But they've just sort of gone to the wrong place for it, if you see what I mean. Not through the scientific method, obviously. There's whole swaths of liberal Christianity, liberal religion in general, which has zero certainty. And it's all about the woolly areas. Yes. And to me, I would never felt home there. I always sort of felt, but actually, what did Jesus raise from the dead, though? But I know it's a metaphor as well, but did it actually happen?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're not interested in that.
I think that's what I was getting too, actually. When I say I wasn't getting answers, I was getting fluffy answers that didn't mean anything. But I probably did mean something to the people who were saying it to me, but they just, it didn't mean anything to me. Like, well, you know, he moves in mysterious ways.
Right.
What are you saying? And that's not an answer. I've actually found now in my life today that I have a great delight in trying to understand how evolution works. And I don't think I fully understand it, because I can't get my head around the years. You know, even with the love of astronomy, I can't get how that concept of time.
The deep time.
Yeah, it's just... But I love the fact that I can't get my head around it. And I love the fact that I don't have certain answers on anything, really, and that everything is a little bit woolly, and there's so many grey areas.
I found exactly as you said, that feeling, not being able to wrap your head around something, the mystery of it, the wooliness, I've been able to kind of retroactively sympathise with my religious counterparts through my understanding of science, because I find that sense of kind of grandeur and that awe-inspiring science-induced sense of mystery. That's a touchstone for me for the way that people talk about God. When you present them with some kind of black and white boxed portrayal of God and they say, no, it's more complicated than that. I can't fully comprehend it. Mm. It sounds like nonsense to a lot of people, but if you try and explain that feeling you get when you think about astronomical time, astronomical distance, that is now sort of my personal touchstone for the religious experience, pondering evolution, pondering the cosmos.
But is it enough?
For me, it definitely is.
Right.
I would never tell somebody else that it should be enough for them.
Yes.
I think maybe that's a nuance that I've developed over time. Before, I would have been like, abandon your foolish religion like I have and accept the reality of the universe, right?
Yes.
But no, I would never think, okay, so I have found personal spiritual gratification in a naturalistic worldview.
Yeah.
I would never try and tell somebody else that that's what they should also have. Mind you, there are harmful kind of beliefs that I think we can try and massage out of people, but it's a lot more complicated, as both of us know, than just telling somebody the facts and then them going, oh, crap, I was wrong. And then just changing their mind, because it's personally embedded, right?
Of
these
course.
Ideas.
That's not what we do, is it? What we do, if there is a brutal fact in the way, we adjust our worldview to, we find ways of including it.
When you're talking about leaving the role as a preacher...
I talk about being a Baptist minister. So
Baptist minister,
the leader of a church community. Yeah.
Okay. Then, but when you're leaving that, there's a period there where you don't believe it anymore, and you're still talking to people about it.
Ah, well, that was something I couldn't do. I mean, I'll be careful what I say here. I'm pretty sure there's some of my colleagues, people that I trained with, who were my friends, you know, that I went to the ministry with, trained with, where the lights have gone out. You know, they're doing a job, but somehow they've lost the spark and conviction, that's the word, that they had. For me, I couldn't do that. I simply could not go onto the platform every Sunday morning or, you know, in the various other meetings that we had and talk to people with a complete conviction. Of course, people noticed I was hedging, you know, and it was an incredibly painful experience.
Yeah.
And it did actually coincide with my marriage breaking up. I like to say, we like to say, that our marriage came to an end because my wife and I are still very good friends.
Yeah.
And we've gone on and had different lives. But I don't know that it certainly was there something big personally going on with the both of us. Apart from that, which was very sad and difficult, there was a sense of tremendous liberation. You know, that all this Christian context, which had even led to my marriage, you know, I mean, if you notice, quite often if I meet very young people who are married, they turn out to be very religious.
Right.
I don't know if you've found this, but it's often the case. You go, oh, right, that makes sense.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Because there's all kinds of reasons why young evangelicals...
Sure are.
And I felt a tremendous sense of liberation. I kind of sort of, as I say, sort of ran screaming into the woods. Also, complete destabilization.
Mm.
In the church, I knew who I was. I was a very big fish in a small goldfish bowl. It gave me my identity, it gave me my sense of purpose and satisfaction.
It was the ground beneath your feet.
Yeah, the relationships that I had with people were profound and very, very important. The fact that people looked to me for leadership, this was so difficult to walk away from.
Yeah.
Incredibly, because you felt like you betrayed people.
Yeah, it's not just changing careers,
no,
is it?
No. It's not like being a plumber and deciding you don't believe in plumbing anymore.
Mm.
You know, it's something far more profound than that. And I got as close to a nervous breakdown as I ever want to get as a result of that.
Mm.
But I think, ultimately, you know, I came back to thinking that, you know, you meet really decent people who've given up comforts in order to care for the poor and... You know, try and make the world a better place, you know, without getting anything back in return, because they believe what they believe. Well, come on. This is a valuable part of human experience.
Okay. But I would say that you've just told the story of going the other way, giving up the comforts to find your own truth, which is away from that.
Yeah.
And because I think sometimes that's sold as why it's true.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
That's not why it's true.
No.
It's just that's what you feel.
Yeah.
And... One of the things that science doesn't, well, it does actually in part try to speak to, and religion spends an awful lot of time speaking to, is morality.
Yeah, yes.
And I was watching The Good Place last night, which is...
Netflix thing.
Netflix. Have you been watching it?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I have to say the Ted Danson character reminds me of you.
Thank you so much.
Yes, all right.
The failed angel.
There was the episode I was watching last night. The conclusion that they came to in that particular episode was that it wasn't possible to be good if the reason you were being good was in order to get to the good place.
Yes.
No, it's exactly right. My idea of morality when I was younger, and maybe had I maintained my faith, it would have become more nuanced anyway. But in any case, I look back and I think, good Lord. Here I am. Like, you're being good because you think there's some ultimate value in being good. And not that being good will get me into heaven. I believe that my faith in Christ would get me into heaven by no merit of my own. Nevertheless, I thought that there was some kind of universal fabric of morality that stretched through the universe in the exact same way that there was physical law, there was moral law established by God and so on. And yet, now I find so much more moral value in people who, if you're good for goodness sake, like the old Christmas carol.
Great song.
There's no guarantee that there's any value to good actions. We, as you said, Andrew, we live in a chaotic universe. There's no guarantee that it means anything. And yet we think it is the right thing to do. And we, by and large, most humans behave that way.
Yeah.
And in a sense, that's an act of faith. We think it is good to be good for its own sake. Not because it's what God's asked of us, not because it conforms to the moral law of the universe, but because for some reason, well, gosh, it's because we're mammals, I think. But in any case, you know, this is the right way to act, and we do it, regardless of whether or not it means something cosmologically. I think that's a lot more meaningful to me.
The other program I watch religiously is Star Trek, of course. There is this religious thing going on at the moment. It's sort of a, I don't know what the theme is. I don't know if you've been watching Discovery, but the second season has these red angels in it, which but Spock, of all people, is being drawn to, which is a fascinating tale which may continue, and I may have to bring you two back to talk about that. But one what they are talking about a lot is empathy. And I think empathy, for me, is the reason that we're good, because we understand what it's like to be a person. So we understand what it is. I know what it's like a little bit to be you two. Not completely. I also understand, because I have empathy, that I don't know what it is to be like you.
You can extrapolate a little bit.
Yeah. And that is the reason to be good. Why on earth would you want to be anything other than that? There is a thought that, and it's quite a prevalent thought in certain sections of society, that if you didn't have a God, then you'd be this terrible person.
Absolutely, yeah.
But that tells me something about those people.
I remember vividly a conversation I had, I must have been about 14 to 16 years old, with two of my closest friends. I had proposed the hypothetical, imagine a possible scenario where it's proven that God doesn't exist. What would you do? To my horror, my solution was to kill myself.
Why?
So I would kill myself if it was proved that God wasn't real. And my friends,
strange.
My friend said, "No, don't do that. You can have sex as much as you want. You can do drugs. You can do anything you want." And to me, that was so revealing, because that meant that the only thing, as you were suggesting, the only thing holding him back wasn't, you know, with the consequences of his actions on other human beings and how that would make his parents feel, how that would make the people he was having sex with feel, the devastation the drugs would have on his body, waste, squandering his chance at existence, all these things. Rather than that, he was thinking, no, don't waste it by killing yourself. Obviously, you could just run rampant. But in my experience, having no longer believe in God, you'll note by the vibrations of my voice through the air that I did not kill myself. And also, having taken my friend's... My response to my friend was, oh yeah, that's a good point. Also horrifying.
Yeah.
But I didn't do that either. When I lost my faith, I didn't lead this life of hedonistic, sinful pursuits and these lustful aims, which I was always told you would do in a life without God. My morality really hasn't changed at all, with the exception that I'm no longer theologically obliged to exclude people from my kind of affection or acceptance. For example, the gay community, my divorced parents. Gosh, you know, the list goes on, but my moral scope has expanded, in other words. Mm. And I don't think that anybody who actually presents the argument, but without God, we would all be just animals, I just think it's because they haven't tried it. when you accept the fact we are just animals and you acknowledge our the mammal chemical basis of our morality, even empathy, you know, if we were reptiles, we wouldn't feel the same way, that it was good to be empathetic. We would have no notion of this. Even acknowledging this, though, I don't think it detracts. And I just think it's because no matter what your worldview is, you reinforce that with a rational, logical explanation. And I think for a lot of fundamentalist believers, their logical explanation for morality is that without God, there would be no morality.
Yes.
But I don't think it's true. I don't think they believe it either.
And there's the other argument, isn't there? An argument very, very similar to this, which is people say, well, but where, yes, but where do your morals come from? You're a moral person, you see. But where do they come from? They come from the religious hinterland. But of course, you know, what about the ancient Greeks who had a very different polytheists and so on? Or they, going back even further, they believed in the household spirits of the ancestors. And their ideas of morality very different from us. And yet, they were fundamentally humanitarian in a recognizable way to how we would think today.
Right.
So,
and I think that's because they're also human. Indeed, God, him or itself, is rather a reflection of the moral sensibilities of human instinct rather than the other way around.
Yeah.
So the reason why I'm moral is because we're moral beings. We're social animals with social morality, and God is this idealized construct of that. It's not the other way around.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they are not normally a violent people, but these are extraordinary circumstances. They're trying to comprehend what they believe to be a god.
Recommendations.
The Mentargans wish to please the Overseer, but they can only guess what he wants. They need a sign.
Are you suggesting?
You must go down to Mentarka 3.
Masquerading as a god?
Absolutely out of the question. The Prime Directive
has already been violated. The damage is done. All we can do now is minimize it.
By sanctioning their false beliefs?
By giving them guidelines, letting them know what the Overseer expects of them.
Dr. Baron, I cannot, I will not impose a set of commandments on these people.
I think a lot of these questions, a lot of these conversations are directly addressed by science fiction. It's like the secular form of religion to me. It's sort of doing everything that religion has done throughout human history, but just telling stories with some scientific grounding. You know, what does it mean to be human? What's the nature of humanity? How can we be moral in a world without X, Y, Z?
Yeah.
Here's this interesting scenario. Here's the scientific framework for it. Go, right?
Yeah.
And there are these little morality plays. And that's exactly what all the Greek myths and all sort of the religious parables and stories are. It's the same concept. It's where, you know, we've got a microphone stacked here on top of Isaac Asimov's Robot Visions. He's addressing society, but looking at it through changing something about society. What if there is this class of human, or are they human,
yeah,
who are machines?
Yes.
And what does it mean to be human?
Yes.
What does it mean to be conscious? Can you be a being and not born?
Yes.
And, I don't know, Blade Runner, and every good science fiction addresses, yes, these, I say, religious questions.
Yes, well, I've been thinking of Blade Runner all the while you've been talking.
Yeah.
The other one was Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which, of course, is literally taking Greek myths and showing the mystical aspect of those ideas. Blade Runner, this is another bit of the universe, a bit that we've had a hand in creating, itself becoming conscious and then thinking spiritual thoughts.
Yeah.
It's quite mind-blowing.
Yeah.
The message of that would be, this is inevitable, that once one is conscious, one is then busy going about the business of creating meaning.
Funnily enough, I spoke to Ty about that.
Yeah. Do you think science can tell us about morality?
It's something we're learning about now with the rise of artificial intelligence, and artificial intelligence is tricky because, you know, it's still modelled after us. It learns from the internet, which is the collection of human experiences. And so it's going to become human-like eventually. So when people say that artificial intelligence does horrible things like is racist on Twitter or or, you know, start swearing at random people, then we've only got ourselves to blame.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe.
So for me, interestingly enough, my deeply religious conservative father loves the Truman Show with as much of a passion as I do, but somehow with the exact opposite interpretation. But for me, the Truman Show, and you were talking about the personal cost of leaving and the personal anguish, the internal turmoil and upheaval that that causes. And for those of you who've seen the Truman Show, it felt for me very much like that. All of the assumptions about the way the world was, how everything operated, what he relied on, his relationships, the fabric of reality, he gradually became aware was not the case. He tries to stifle it when he can, but eventually it becomes too much and he has to break away.
Yeah.
And everything is preventing him from doing it, but he still does it.
Yeah.
And the director character, played by Ed Harris, is called Christoph, the God character. He literally speaks from the heavens at the end of the film. But Truman's journey, I think, is a very good metaphor for the personal subjective experience of what it feels like to have that carpet pulled from under you. He's losing all of that security. Truman was the star of his own show. The universe literally revolved around him in this case. You know, even at the very end, he risks his life. He crashes into the barrier of this dome, right? And even then, there's some resistance to the truth that it's a fabrication. He's beating against the wall, and you can see it's breaking his heart, even though you think he knows by that point.
Yeah.
He knows it's not true, and yet confronted with the brute reality of it, it breaks his heart. And you see this little staircase ascending into heaven.
Yes.
He has a dialogue with God. Yeah. He opens a door into the void, and we never see him again except for passing into this darkness. He has no idea what's behind the door.
Yeah.
And I remember that it felt like that. You describe a liberation. I did not feel any liberation. For me, it was entirely gut-wrenching, tail-spinning, disorientation, and it was very painful. I didn't want this to happen, right? But it sort of felt like it was happening to me.
Yes.
I couldn't ignore the set light falling from the sky and crashing in front of my feet and thinking, right,
I have to do
this. Isn't the official explanation is this is a piece of an airplane in the Truman Show, but he's thinking, okay, whatever. In any case, at the very end, though, he goes through the door and there is this sense of triumph, right?
Yeah.
I guess there is, I can now look back and think that, but at the time I felt nothing but the drowning experience Truman's going through at the end. Why do I have to not believe this?
Yes.
Because it provided everything that I thought I needed, but I can't believe it. And I've got friends who I think also can't believe it, but they're sort of happy to
Go along sort with of, it. So.
This is, I think, part of science fiction's function is to look at this stuff.
Totally. Well, I did say I religiously watch Star Trek. I really meant it.
If you approach the Bible, as I do, as a piece of ancient human literature, which has deep truths within it, in a very loose sense, lowercase t, no one denies that Greek myths have human truths contained within them, regardless of whether or not you believe they actually happened.
And they're part of our struggle to make meaning of the world.
And I find a weird similarity in what I feel when I talk about the natural world and science and what religious people are talking about when they talk about God and their experience with religion. Mm. Even though I don't anymore accept any of the religious trappings that they do, there's some overlap that I'm like, okay, this concept of mystery, the numinous, the awe and wonders, for me, that's what elicits it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I pursue an understanding of science. For me, learning about the universe is one of the meanings of life. We have a brief opportunity to exist at all in this universe, and I want to try and understand as much of it as I possibly can while I'm here.
Yeah,
that's a meaning of life for me. There's still room
In science, there's something. Look, we're all here because a supernova exploded and made these greater than iron atoms that are all part of us, and we wouldn't be possible without these incredible things. We are the universe becoming conscious of itself.
That's exactly. This is a very spiritual idea.
Incredible,
almost, right?
Incredible. And was it Teilhard de Chardin? He used to talk about the noosphere, you know, and he was a Catholic theologian. He said that, you know, what a human being is that bit of the universe that's become conscious of itself. That's, this is an extraordinary... hard thing to understand how this has happened.
Yeah, Carl Sagan talked about that as well. Yeah. But he said we're a way for the cosmos to know itself.
And just to take that a little bit further, so science does that and says that, and it goes, okay, there you go, human, take that away. Right. What are you going to do with that? And so then what we do, because we can't help ourselves, is try and create meaning, because we need to. We're meaning-making creatures. The Bible represents thousands of years, literally, of people thinking about big existential issues, about their place in the universe and their relationship to, if there was a creator, who was it? There's lots of agnosticism in the Bible, strangely enough. Mm. What you get is a community over a long period of time struggling with different ideas of God and who, and different ideas of what a person is. And I suddenly thought, well, I can't just chuck all that out and treat that as an idiotic aberration. Not that I'm going to go and embrace it with any idea of religion either. It's simply that, come on, this is a worthy human enterprise. This is honest struggling. Much of it is, anyway, if not all of it. I think about my parents. You know, my parents are still alive. They have a very sort of straightforward faith. They're very kind people. Faith is incredibly important to them. Mm-hmm. And the idea that someone would say, you complete fools, you know, can't you see that this is a complete fiction, seems to me to be an unnecessary violence.
Science is the best way to understand things about the natural universe. There are other questions about human experience, which I think are best addressed by the arts, by a poetic interpretation of the world. For me, I plant religious orientation squarely within the arts, and I don't think it's a coincidence Star Trek's exploring it, because science fiction is religious parables for a scientific age.
Yes.
Jordan, if people wanted to get hold of your wonderful comic, which explores this beautifully in different angles and different ways than we have today, how do they do that?
Well, thank you. If you're on Twitter, you can just look me up, which is just at Jordan Culver, my name, and it's pinned to the top of my Twitter page. Look at it for free online. If you really like it, then you can also just send me an email and I'll post you a paper copy as well. My email's jordan.culver@gmail.com. And the good news is the research project has moved to Birmingham University, so it's in a slightly different academic context than when I wrote it. So I might be doing potentially a slightly updated version of it in the near future, in which case there'll be fresh copies.
And a fresh excuse to come back to the Cosmic Shed.
Exactly, yes.
It would be totally wrong if I didn't also mention that you and I have just worked together for Physics World.
Indeed we have.
I wrote a feature article, no less, about the Oumuamua.
Interstellar object.
Yes, well done. Is it an asteroid, a comet, or something else entirely? And Jordan provided some wonderful illustrations for that. That's in the current edition of Physics World. It will also be on the Physics World website. But we'll post a link to that and, of course, Jordan's stuff on the Cosmic Shed website. And, Malcolm, if people want to learn how to speak in public, where do I come?
I was wondering, what can I contribute to this conversation? Malcolmlove.org is my
lovely
website.
I can highly recommend Love and Science on BCFM at 3 p.m. on Monday afternoons. Malcolm is, as he says, the love of the show.
Yes.
And
bcfmradio.com
/love and science. But thank you very much to both of you and to Ty. I think, honestly, we could talk about this in the shed for the next 7 weeks and it would be very interesting. I feel like...
We'd get very cold.
Yeah, we would. We already are, let's face it.
And it's another beautiful day in paradise, folks, but don't forget to buckle up out there in Radioland. We now have a good driver. Good. And a safe driver. He's a good.
Wait for the cue, Batman. Wait for the cue. Stand by one. Countdown to action. Stand by one. He's heading west on the road. Stand by all electors. Go ahead and be on you in about 5 seconds.
The Cosmic Shed.
science fact,
science fiction,
and everything in between.